On this week's 51%, meet a woman whose bodybuilding is a source of both physical and mental strength.
It definitely has helped me to continue to live in a very literal sense and to live more fully.
A college student launches a program to provide free sanitary products. And a woman who was diagnosed with breast cancer talks about a treatment that saved her hair. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. And I want taking back my life today. Nothing left that you can say, 'cause you were never gonna take the blame anyway. Now I'm a warrior. I got thicker skin. I'm a warrior. I'm stronger than I've ever been. Bodybuilding is no easy feat. Bodybuilders spend endless hours in the gym. They count carbs and grams of fat meticulously. Why? To get ripped, maybe, but for Melissa Verdi, it's more than that. Ruby Schwartz reports from Massachusetts.
In the beginning, I literally had to, like, put my big girl panties on to come here by myself because it was intimidating.
Melissa Verdi is at her local gym in Hyannis. Since that first fearful day, it's safe to say Melissa's attitude has changed.
There's a machine over there. It's a leg press. I've done 500 on it.
500 pounds, that is. Melissa's a 52-year-old mother of two, and she's training for an upcoming bodybuilding competition. A couple years ago, she picked a random diet she found online, and just like that, she signed up for a bodybuilding competition.
I came home with a trophy, but only because there were only four of us competing, so I got fourth place.
Melissa hasn't stopped since, and it's not just because she wants to look strong. It's because she wants to feel strong, to feel worthy. She says bodybuilding drowns out this voice in her head that's always told her she's not good enough.
What does this feel like?
Oh, it hurts.
Melissa's doing shoulder presses. It's her second time at the gym for the day. And she works full time. It's intense. But she can push herself through almost anything these days.
I think I'm just mentally very tough. That's the upside of going through horrible things, is that you learn how to cope. This is nothing, and this is something I'm choosing.
Melissa's past holds memories of when her choice was taken away. Haunting memories.
I was sexually abused from the age of 5 until the age of 11. It was by my stepfather. I told people. He admitted it, was arrested, sent to jail for 1 year. And the worst part was that my mother then allowed him to come back to our home. So for me, that was the ultimate betrayal of the person that is supposed to have your back. So while the man was in jail, we had to go visit him. And where you visited was in the cafeteria where there were picnic-style tables. She sat with my brother and sister on one side, and I had to sit next to him, with him putting his hand up my dress, her sitting there watching it happen and doing nothing. That's not a mother.
This abuse, this betrayal, they're what made Melissa constantly question her worthiness, what led to years of depression. At one point, Melissa tried to take her own life. Bodybuilding, though, it helps keep the weight off her shoulders.
It definitely has helped me to continue to live in a very literal sense and to live more fully.
But still, Melissa sometimes questions exactly why she's doing it. She knows there are no easy fixes.
I'm still proving to myself that I have tenacity, that I am tough. I don't know that that'll ever go away.
Bodybuilding keeps her moving forward, always aiming for the next goal. But there's another, more important driving force in her life.
The love of my children, because I can't leave them. I shouldn't have even thought about it. But I didn't know that I was worth anything then. They would never want a world without me in it. And I'm here. And I'm doing a show. And I'm hoping I'm going to kick butt. be.
Melissa's standing in front of a full-length mirror, wearing a red velvet bikini and strappy stilettos. She's in the outfit she'll wear at her next competition. She's studying her reflection.
I'm happy. Like, I don't think I can get much more off of here, so I'm pulling skin from my waist. Yeah, I'm happy, like, with the overall shape.
And what about, like, emotionally?
I'm like, good job, girl. You're there. You're ready. Is it the best physique I've ever seen? No. But it's my best, and I'm hoping it's good enough to win me something. We'll see.
For WCAI's Ways of Life, I'm Ruby Schwartz in Hyannis.
Meantime, two legendary Olympians were in Albany, New York recently to promote a new upcoming sports competition. 51%'s Jesse King reports.
Organizers of Albany's Aurora Games named the honorary captains of the festival's two competing teams. Three-time Olympic gold medalist Jackie Joyner Kersee will head Team Americas. Five-time Olympic gold gymnast Nadia Comaneci will lead Team World. Speaking at the Times Union Center, Comaneci says she was eager to get involved when the game's executive producer and creator, Jerry Solomon, approached her.
You mentioned about the Aurora Games and just to do something to celebrate women in sports and continue what the women have done through all the years. When he said that, I said, yep, I'm in. Sign me in.
All-star athletes and coaches from 15 different countries will participate in the games from August 20th to 25th. Events include gymnastics, figure skating, ice hockey, basketball, tennis, and beach volleyball. Solomon says the lack of public appreciation for women's sports and history was a major reason for his starting the games.
I asked my 10-year-old daughter who Babe Ruth is. She doesn't know anything about baseball. She knew he was a baseball player. If you ask those same people who Babe Didrikson Zaharias is, the vast majority of them will have no idea. And to me, that really crystallizes the issue because Babe Didrikson Zaharias was a far better athlete than Babe Ruth.
For the record, Zaharias was a two-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field and also excelled in basketball and baseball. She was a founding member of the LPGA and won 10 golf majors. As part of incorporating history into the games, Solomon says the official Aurora Games trophy will be named in her honor.
She was, and I think you guys would agree, just a phenomenal athlete who really paved the way for a lot of things that have come since.
That said, local officials were just as quick to praise Comaneci and Joyner Kersee. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy presented official proclamations to both women for their achievements, saying the Aurora Games could be a major highlight for the Times Union Center and Albany County.
Where else could you go to come down here and catch the best sporting events you're ever going to see in your life? We can do this ourselves, and we can set the example to look up to. That's what I see out of the Aurora Games.
Comaneci became a household name in gymnastics at the age of 14, when she was the first gymnast to score a perfect 10 at the Olympics at the 1976 Games. Jackie Joyner Kersee is a track and field legend, setting the world record for the heptathlon in the 1988 Olympics. Joyner Kersee says she looks forward to being a captain come August. She credits the women who coached her with nurturing her as both an athlete and a human being, and sees the Aurora Games as an opportunity to do the same for other young girls.
It's one thing to have an idea. It's another to bring that idea to reality. And that's where each and every one of you come in, is that it's going to take all of us to continue to elevate young girls that's developing and want to do sports, and women who are going to participate in the Aurora Games. Nadia and I were not competing, but we somewhat are because it's the America against the world. So here we go again. Thank you.
Tickets for the Aurora Games go on sale March 8th to coincide with International Women's Day. In Albany, New York, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
A record crowd of 48,121 attended a women's soccer match between Athletic Bilbao and Atletico Madrid in Spain recently. Athletic says it was the largest ever attendance for a club-level women's match in Europe. The record for any women's match was the 90,185 people who watched the 1999 World Cup final between the United States and China at the Rose Bowl. In 2015, a women's game between England and Germany drew 55,000 fans to Wembley Stadium in London. A student at the State University of New York at Fredonia has started an initiative to provide free sanitary products to students on campus. WBFO's Eileen Buckley says the program is called FredFlow.
We expect students to come onto campus and be Fredonia ready, but we want Fredonia to be student ready.
Fredonia senior Monica Manny is majoring in journalism. She authored an article about making sanitary products accessible on campus for students in need.
There was a woman on Fredonia's campus, and she was kind of walking around asking for sanitary products, and they said that there weren't any. One of my mentors from school was just telling me how, you know, that she had to look around her room to find some for her, and she was able to find some for her. But then we were just thinking, like, there are none in any of the restrooms on campus.
And that inspired Manny to develop FredFlow. She's created a club and program.
There were so many people who had the issue and not a lot of people talking about it. So when I did the article, so many people were like, yeah, no, I had to run across campus, give pads to my friends. Like, I had to go back to my dorm, get pads from my dorm, worried about, you know, if I was going to bleed through my clothes on my way to my back to my room.
I thought it was a great idea because I remembered that we used to have machines and people had to have coins, and often the machines weren't stocked appropriately.
SUNY Fredonia President Virginia Horvath embraces Manny's work on this initiative. She agrees students should have quick and easy access to the products when needed.
Especially on a campus where people may not be near their residence hall rooms, that can create a problem if they're 10 minutes away and have just 5 minutes between class and realize that they need those supplies.
Next semester, Fredonia will launch a pilot program. Sanitary products will be placed in dispensing machines free of charge in all gender restrooms across the campus. Manny tells WBFO News they must be inclusive.
Some trans men also have periods, so we need to make sure that we're being inclusive. Reason being, we're putting them in all of the all-gender restrooms so that there's no, you know, we don't have to expose anyone or anything like that, because that's absolutely what we're not about.
To have everyone realize that when we talk about menstrual supplies, it's not just women, that there are people who are in gender transition and those who are not identifying as women. So we have all gender restrooms, but we need to make sure that everyone who has a period has a way to have supplies through the day.
Along with inclusivity, Manny's goal is to decrease the stigma around menstruation, breaking myths and taboos. But Manny was surprised by the response from her generation and the willingness to discuss the topic.
There are also a lot of questions that people have that they kind of missed out on in middle school as far as health, and they feel like now it's too late to ask the questions because they feel like they should know already. And that's one of the things we talked about, like, at our town hall meeting, just like ovulating. Do you know when you ovulate? And people are like, no. And I'm just like, yeah, me either. We need to learn this. Like, we need to figure it out because this is really important to know for no other reason but to be in tune with your body.
Manny set up a GoFundMe page to help assist the program. But President Horvath established an endowment called the Monica Manny Fund for Student Health and Wellness. This will generate unrestricted dollars each year to provide the supplies.
Once it reaches the endowment level, which should be soon, then the interest from that endowment will have funds in perpetuity.
Manny graduates this May. She is hopeful the program will sustain itself for future generations.
That's what I'm hoping, because it is so necessary, and it's going to be necessary for a very long time. So I just want to see it, make sure that for no, you know, personal benefit at all, but just making sure that people are prepared.
Eileen Buckley, WBFO News.
Massachusetts prisons officials have for the first time moved a transgender inmate from a men's prison to a women's prison. Court filings show the 55-year-old inmate, who has lived as a woman and received hormone therapy for decades, was transferred in September from MCI Norfolk to the state's women's prison in Framingham. The prisoner's lawyer, Jennifer Levi, tells the Boston Globe that she thinks it's the first time a transgender inmate anywhere in the U.S. has been moved to a facility that corresponds to her gender identity. The Department of Correction declined to comment on the case's specifics, but said it acted in accordance with a new Massachusetts law designed to protect transgender inmates' rights. The inmate, whose name was not disclosed, is serving a 3-to-4-year sentence for a nonviolent drug offense. And we're back with Dr. Sharon Ufberg and her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time, she interviews Kasia Waslak, a 28-year-old working mother who lives in Boston with her husband and 2-year-old daughter. At age 26, she found a lump on her left breast a year before her wedding, so the thought of losing her hair during chemotherapy treatment upset her. However, a year later, she walked down the aisle with nearly a full head of hair, and now she's open to sharing how she was able to spare a good amount of her hair using a scalp cooling treatment during chemotherapy.
At the time when I found my lump, I had felt that I had, you know, felt my best and looked my best. We had just done our engagement pictures, and when I found the lump, it came out of nowhere. I didn't have any other symptoms other than that. And then when I found out it was cancer, I was naturally devastated. And then post my mastectomy, and we found out that there was lymph node involvement. And then once the lymph nodes were involved, I found out about chemo, and that was truly devastating. Just because I knew I had a wedding to plan, and I know that just knowing that you lose hair during chemo, and how I pictured chemo was just a horrific sight, of course. And so during my exam with the doctor, when I learned I had to do chemo, I was naturally upset and crying. And then all of a sudden, my oncologist mentioned that I can do this thing called cold gapping. And at the time, she didn't know much about it, and I didn't know much about it either. But I was like, I'm doing this. I don't care what it takes and what's involved, but I need to do this and try to save my hair. So that's kind of how it started.
So it was actually a process that you had your scalp was cooled during the actual treatment. Is that it?
Correct. So you would wear a cap before, during, and after treatment to cool down your to restrict the blood vessels from the chemo reaching them, and therefore saving your hair.
So what did you feel like were the main challenges of doing that cooling treatment? I know that just going through chemotherapy alone is very challenging. Here you are, a young woman, having to go through this. Can you talk a little bit about, one, you know, how many treatments did you have to get with the cap on your head, and what challenges there might have been actually doing the procedure?
Absolutely. So initially, I think the challenges were that the Dana-Farber, which is where I got my treatment, the Paxton cooling system was new to them. And so no one had a lot of information on it, and there hadn't been anyone that was successful or at least went through the program that I could speak to or ask questions to. So I think that was my initial challenge, was just the lack of information. Of course, the mm-hmm. website provided me with information, but it's just different knowing a person or seeing them physically and seeing their hair gives it a little bit more of an encouragement to do that. Another thing was that it added time to treatment, so I would have to get there before and treatment would be extended. So I had to, because of the drugs that I was on, which was Taxol, I did a cooling of 30 minutes before and then 1 hour post-treatment. And then treatment.
So you had to have the cap on. I'm sorry. You had to have this cap, cooling cap on your head that was obviously very, very cold before you got the chemo, and then during the chemo, which was how many hours, how much time were you having the chemo?
About 2 hours for two of the drugs to go in.
Okay. And then you had to sit for another hour to keep the coolant passing through the cap, so to keep the, you know, the chemo from getting to your scalp.
Exactly.
And how many treatments did you use the cap for?
For 12 of them, so all of my treatments. So I had 12 initial weekly treatments.
Okay. And would you recommend other people do it? Did it work? I mean, what was your, you mean, you said you walked down the aisle with hair, you know, what was your response to it?
If anyone is at least thinking about trying it, I would absolutely recommend trying it, because you never know if it will work for you. And it did work for me. And even though I lost so much of my hair during the time I was in treatment, and then after, and then even now, which is a year later, no one would ever know what I went through, which, you know, is very important, because you feel like you have no control over anything else in your life during that time. So I would absolutely try it, regardless of what, even if you have, you know, speculations about it not working. I did find that, you know, the added time and the pain that you feel because it is cold was still worth it, and I would definitely encourage anyone to try it.
Well, it sounds like you were very brave to do it, not knowing anyone else who had gone through the procedure personally. Can we talk a little about the cost? Was it a very costly process, and is it available now for women who do want to try it? Can you speak to that issue?
Yes. So Dana-Farber had started the program right when I had started chemotherapy, and the cost for it was it's $500 to get the kit, which includes the cap itself, which is kind of like a helmet, and then the products you use to wash your hair, and then you put a conditioner on your hair before applying the cold cap as well during the treatment, and then like a little headband to prevent your forehead from feeling all the cold. So that is $500, and then you prepay for every treatment, and then there's like a tier of how much they charge you for every treatment. So I had 12 treatments, which is the most they will charge you for, and that caps at $2,200. And my insurance, which I felt had covered so much of everything that I had gone through, and I considered it very good coverage, did not cover the cold cap, but they did cover wigs, which I felt was a little weird considering if they were to apply the cost of the wig to that, I felt like it would have been better. But regardless, it was good.
So it's a pretty expensive procedure. You had mentioned to me that you thought that there may now be some resources for women who couldn't afford that, that they actually there are some organizations now that are creating opportunities for people that don't have the resources to do it to actually be able to have the scalp cooling treatment. Is that still happening?
Yep. So I actually applied. So it's like it's a nonprofit organization. It's called Hair to Stay, and the website is hairtostay.org. And you basically fill out the form. It's a one-page form. It's very easy. And you send it in along with your receipt for the cold cap, and they will reimburse you based on your income. So I would encourage everyone to at least fill out the form. It's not hard. And they do give them, they gave me some of my money back within a couple of weeks. So.
Oh, that's great. So it's just a matter of it's based on your ability to pay. So they reimburse
exactly.
People. Okay, that's wonderful. I know that you have spent some time since this horrifying experience that you went through blogging about it and talking about your life, including your cancer and the cold cap journey. Could you share with the audience your name of your blog, your site, so that people could hear more about you, Kasia?
Absolutely. So my blog is, the website for it is www.myochemo.blog. And it's just, I share my whole cancer journey, but also just cold cap tips that I found to be helpful and the challenges I found and anything pretty much more that I would want to know before I started that I didn't have available to me.
I'm sure you'd be also happy if people went onto your blog and found you. Again, it's myochemo, which is myokemo.blog. And Kasia Wozlak, thank you so much for being here. I'm sure there's lots of women out there that are delighted to hear your good story and your good results from this. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And this is Dr. Sharon Usberg on Force of Nature. For 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. State legislatures across the country are convening this year with at least 17 new women in top leadership roles after a record-setting election for female candidates. But those gains are offset by another reality. At least a dozen women who led their legislative chambers or caucuses last year will no longer be doing so because of term limits and decisions to seek higher office or retire. The bottom line is that women made only modest gains in legislative leadership positions despite their electoral success. They will hold at least 34 of the 195 top spots in House and Senate chambers across the country. That's up slightly from 30 top leadership positions last year. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett and Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1542.